Chapter 34. Chris in the Pit. It had been a few months since the FBI had taken down the LulzSec hackers, and the hangovers from the subsequent celebrations at the Whiskey Tavern had since worn off. Yet there was one aspect of that case that Chris Tarbell couldn't get out of his mind. He was sitting in an area known as the Pit at the New York FBI offices, talking with other FBI agents, Ilwan Yum and Tom Kiernan, weighing if the cybercrimes division of the FBI should get involved in the Silk Road case or go after a different target instead. The Pit, where they sat, looked like a sunken living room and was big enough for a handful of desks and chairs. This enclave had been around for decades and was considered the top spot in the New York City headquarters. Years earlier, before Tarbell and the nerdy computer agents started occupying the desks there, the Pit was home to organized crime agents. Back then, they went after mobsters who stayed as far away from technology as possible, fearing that something as inconsequential as a payphone could be used to track their location. Now the men in the Pit went after mobsters who had adopted technology as a way to hide their whereabouts. But the old guys and the new did share one thing in common. Both generations of FBI agents were practical jokers. Some days, Tarbell and his colleagues would rub leftover deli meat on another agent's desk phone earpiece, then call from another room to watch the agent smear roast beef and mayonnaise on his or her ear. Tarbell had once played a joke using another agent's car, hooking the car's horn up to its brake pedal, so every time the agent tried to slow down on his drive home, his horn blared at the cars in front of him. And then Tarbell was always ready with a would-you-rather question. Tarbell's desk was covered in papers and paraphernalia from previous cases. In the center of this mess were his three computers, the two classified machines that were used only for internal work, and the one unclassified computer that couldn't be traced back to the FBI, where on the screen the Silk Road website currently sat, looking back at the agents. As they spoke about the site, Tarbell thought to himself that if they did go after the Silk Road, he was going to do everything he could to avoid the unthinkable mistake the Bureau had made in the recent LulzSec case. There were two main aspects of the LulzSec arrests the feds needed to pull off for the takedown to work properly. First, it was imperative that they capture every suspect at the exact same time, even though they were all in different states and countries. They had to ensure that the hackers didn't alert anyone else about their arrests, or the entire operation would fall apart. The FBI had pulled this part off seamlessly. But it was the second detail, which was equally important, where they had failed dismally. It was crucial to capture each suspect on his or her laptop with the computer open. If the hackers closed their computers and those computers were encrypted, the data inside would be locked away forever. Even with the fastest and most advanced FBI computers, it could take more than 1,000 years to figure out the password of a properly encrypted machine. One of the most important LulzSec targets that the FBI planned to arrest was also allegedly the most dangerous member of the group. His name was Jeremy Hammond, and he was a political activist and computer hacker who'd been arrested more than 6 times for protests against both Nazis and Republicans, for breaking into private servers around the world, and for releasing information to WikiLeaks. Fast forward to the night of the LulzSec takedown. The plan was as follows. Tarbell would go to Ireland to oversee the arrest of one of the LulzSec team's youngest hackers, a sprightly 19-year-old. An FBI team in Chicago would be stationed, ready to pounce on Hammond. Senior agents in New York would watch live video feeds of the other arrests. Given Hammond's ties to political advocacy groups and his several previous arrests, there was a chance that the hideout he was in would also be full of other activists, some with violent records. So at the last minute, a higher-up at the FBI decided to send in a fully armed SWAT team to get Hammond on his computer. It would be the first time the FBI would use a SWAT team to arrest someone on a laptop. It was early evening when the FBI trucks tore into the Bridgeport area of Chicago, and a dozen men in bulletproof vests with machine guns descended on the single-story brick house where Hammond was hiding. The wooden front door flew off its hinges, and the agents stormed inside, throwing a flashbang grenade into the kitchen on the left, and then scurrying into the other rooms with weapons drawn, screaming, "FBI! FBI! FBI!" But in the few seconds it took the SWAT team to reach the rear of the house where Hammond sat, the dreadlocked hacker had calmly pushed the lid of his laptop closed. And there he sat at his desk, his hands in the air, and a locked computer in front of him. It was the equivalent of doing a massive drug bust, and the suspect flushing the drugs down the toilet before the cops made it into the bathroom. While all the agents were upset about the laptop incident, Tarbell was particularly tormented by it. He didn't make mistakes. Ever. And yet, here he had. Thankfully, there was a silver lining to the Hammond incident. Maybe it was an accident, or possibly laziness, but for some reason, Hammond had not encrypted his laptop properly. And the FBI forensics lab was eventually able to get inside using a special brute force technology that tries every password imaginable until it guesses the correct one. It took the government's supercomputer 6 months to figure out that Hammond's password was Chewy12345. But Tarbell knew that being able to crack the code was pure luck. Most, if not all, experienced hackers and people on the dark web encrypted their laptops with much stronger passwords for this very reason. Now, as Tarbell sat there in the pit, talking to his co-workers about how they would approach this Silk Road case, he assured his team that if they did go after the dread pirate Roberts, they wouldn't make the same mistake they had with Hammond. Tarbell would have a plan to ensure they captured DPR with his hands on the keyboard.